I am unashamed. What about you?
Al, I don't know what y'all did this morning, but I was up early with the local redneck tweaking the duck hole, adding more brush. The eunuch and I, we went down there and Red, old Red, the local redneck, he's out there doing a little work. So
I mean, basically the teal came through, when was that, Friday?
The teal came through about 3 or 4 days ago.
So we're early September.
Early September, they're late.
Which is good.
But the first wave of them have come by. They're heading toward the Yucatan Peninsula in Mexico. They stayed one day and they moved.
I'm glad you're relaxed today.
Huh? You had a good breakfast too, I see.
Yeah, they stayed one day. And
but those teal, those blue wings are here today and gone tomorrow. Well, let me tell you what happened to me. You know, I always love this time of year because you got, you know, I'm sitting here waiting 9 months to be reborn after duck season closes. But actually, you get the undercard. You know, you have dove season, which is next weekend. Then you have teal season, then it's squirrels, and then it's deer. You know, you go through the process to get to duck season. But it's also the same time football season, which, you know how we are about, which LSU looked pretty good.
Very good.
Our everyday life experiences, ladies and gentlemen, what my second son is discussing is a way of life, and it's called the hunt. The hunt.
The hunt.
It is the hunt. I mean, we share Jesus, we get ready to hunt, and then watch a little football on the way. So, look, we had the jamboree for the high school Saturday night. Was it Friday night or Saturday night?
It was Friday night.
Friday night. So, and it's at ULM, which used to be NLU. And so West Monroe, which is where my daughter goes, they're playing Neville.
She's a cheerleader.
She's a cheerleader, which is used to be a big rivalry. Well, I think it still is.
It still is.
And we've been, you know, I think when I was there, we had beat them like 3 times out of 50. So it's really not a rivalry if you don't ever win. But
we broke a 17-year losing streak one of the years I was at West Monroe.
But
17 years.
Look, since then, Don Childs took over, and people don't know who that is. But look, it turned West Monroe football into a powerhouse. We made it to the Dome last year. We were runner-up. But anyway, so we watched the game. You know, Miss Mia's cheering, Missy and I. Look, we actually lost to Jamboree, which is a shocker. But so we're driving home, you know, having a conversation. I got to tell you this story. And I feel something crawling on me. And I'm like,
feel something crawling
on
you?
I'm in the driver's seat driving down Interstate 65 miles an hour. Coming home from the game. Something's crawling on me.
Where was the crawl happening?
Right on my chest.
On your chest.
Bare skin. Well, when I was calm, because I don't want to panic.
It's happened to me many times.
So I just kind of just grabbed tightly, but not in a way where if this thing had teeth or a stinger, you know. But when I grabbed it, I thought, this is big. And it was trying to squirm. And I told Missy, I said, I have caught something, some kind of insect that's on my body. And she's like, do what?
I was
like,
and you're driving at
I'm
the
driving.
You're on the I-20 bridge.
Yeah, I'm
so
on
there's
the
no pulling over.
There's no pulling over. Can't pull over.
This is worse than looking at your cell phone. There's something alive and you've got your hand on it. It's
weird,
bigger than you anticipated.
Yeah, what's
Jace,
weird?
I haven't heard this story, so
well, I know.
You have my attention.
So my daughter and my wife start screaming. Now, that's what I found the most bizarre.
So they're screaming.
She just starts screaming, and I'm like.
And they're adding excitement to
well,
whatever's
happening. I'm looking around thinking there are more critters. I was like, what are you screaming? She said, there's a bug on you. I was like, but it's on me. She's like, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? I said, I'm going to get off the interstate, pull over, and see what this is. I don't want to panic. because this is seems big.
Nor wreck the vehicle.
Yeah, I don't want to wreck
but
the vehicle.
But they're panicking.
They're full-blown panic.
So I finally
something's
get off.
Crawling on you, and the women are screaming yeah. in the background. That's the ladies and gentlemen, that's yeah. the story coming forward.
So I pull over, and I thought, because I could tell it. This thing felt dangerous to me. I don't know why. My instincts told me I've got a critter that has teeth, or this is something that could hurt me. Yeah. And I can't believe it hadn't hurt me as of yet. And so I pulled over on the side of the road. It coming by, so I lifted my shirt up, and I was like, I'm going to just do 1, 2, 3, and just, like, drop it down without, because I had that prayer. I could tell I had it by the head. And so when I did it, I looked, and it was a wasp. When it hit the pavement, you know, then I stepped on it, and I was like, you doggone rascal, which how I didn't get stung is amazing, but I just happened, you know, it was one of those guinea wasps.
Oh, yeah, those hurt.
And so I was like, how did that thing not sting me, you know? So we get in the car, you know, and they're still screaming, you know. I was like, come look at this thing. No, don't even want to see it. So we drive home, had a few laughs, no big deal. Everybody, you know, my crew goes to bed early. I'm a night owl.
So is this story still continuing?
Oh, yeah, it gets better.
This is the beginning of the story?
This is the beginning
because
of the
I've
story.
Had more wasps and guinea wasps and everything else crawl on my chest. So up to now, it's not been
that's
much.
That's the setup.
It's kind of a weird thing.
I thought it was more to the story.
Yeah,
that.
It is. So they go to bed. It's about midnight. I'm laying in my little spot on the couch, you know, and watching TV, starting to doze off. And all of a sudden, I feel like a sharp pain around my ear. It was like I jumped, and I was like, what was that? And so I started grabbing my ear, but I didn't feel anything. And so I was like, what was that? No big deal. So a couple minutes goes by, and all of a sudden, my ear begins to, like, I don't know how to describe what it was doing.
Pulsate?
Pressure from the inside of my head started to build, and it was like, you know, it was making a lot of racket. And yeah. I was like, what, I got water in my ear? You know, that's what I was thinking. And I was like, no big deal. And about the time I said no big deal, a ferocious pain like I've never felt. The worst, I've been on the earth 50 years, the worst pain I've ever felt. I literally fell off the couch, got on my knees, and was like, oh! I thought, something has happened that's terrible inside my head.
Like an aneurysm. You're thinking
you're
fixing
I was thinking my eardrum had ruptured, you know? I thought, so I felt a sharp pain, which I started thinking about the wasp, you know? I was like, what?
You're trying to connect the dots. Yeah.
But I mean, I'm feeling there's nothing. So for the next hour, I literally rolled around on the floor, just writhing in pain. 1 hour. And I was thinking, if I can get to the truck, I'll drive to the ER because I'm dying. You know, that's what I was thinking. My head, something in my head has exploded.
What's interesting is you weren't thinking if I could just get to Missy.
No, never crossed my mind. Which, look,
most people be like, I'll get to my wife.
Just more screams.
I can't believe you said that. See, I think I didn't go in there because she screamed over the last part. Now yeah. I'm dying.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I'm not
this is something to scream about.
This way of thinking. All right, go ahead.
So the pressure keeps building, you know, and it's just like it won't go away. And so I got a little disoriented, and so, like, I crawl to the bathroom, and I'm I don't know what I'm looking for. I'm
relief.
So I open the bottom cabinet, you know, and I'm looking, fumbling through, and I see some earwax remover. And so I thought, I'm.
How long does this story last?
Pretty long. So I said, you know what? Something's in my ear. That's what I thought. Something's ruptured in my ear. I'm going to flush it. So I lean over, pour the earwax remover in my ear because they had a bulb with it.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And so I poured it in there, and then I started, like, squishing yep. it out. When I did that, it got 10 times worse. Now I'm just like, I'm hollering in pain. I can't believe it didn't wake
up. I've been saying your family's still fast asleep.
Oh, everybody's asleep. Oh, yeah. My wife's got the fan going.
So I think it's safe to say that the world is going to change. I mean, it changes pretty much you know, on a daily or weekly basis, depending on what season you're in, hurricane season, storms hit, political unrest. I mean, it's kind of a dicey, you
can,
you know.
Your life can change in a matter of minutes.
So we really kind of find out how fragile life is when you got something really difficult going on. So, you know, the question is today, how prepared are you if a major emergency happened? Now, this month is National Preparedness Month. I don't know if you knew that, Dad.
I didn't know that.
National Preparedness Month.
I didn't have to know that to be nationally prepared.
So basically, it doesn't have to be put on the calendar for you to say, I need to be prepared.
You are correct.
Well, the resurrection is the ultimate preparation. But in the meantime,
That's right.
Can do some common sense things to be prepared.
So our good friends at My Patriot Supply have helped us be prepared because, you know, some storm, some, you know, one of these EMP pulses, something happens. We're going to have some food. We're going to have a four-week food supply. And we got, look here, we got cheese and broccoli and rice soup. We got potato soup.
Here's Spanish rice. Can you imagine? This will hold for 25 years.
25 years. And so we wanted to give you the opportunity to do the same thing. If you act today, you save $100 on one of these four-week supply buckets. When you go to the website, preparewithphil.com. So basically, we're going to prepare with Phil. .com. You get an opportunity. You get free shipping. It's going to come right to your door. You know, we're not saying, you know, who knows when something's going to strike.
You could take all this stuff, put it all in your duck blinds, and if something happens, we just live in a duck blind.
I would simply say get right with God, because that he'd give you immortality. But while you're here, keep your little supply of grub.
That's exactly
just in
right.
case.
So it's preparewithphil.com. Check it out. Save you some money. It's Preparedness Month, National Preparedness Month. So let's get on this thing.
You betcha.
So about 2 hours later, I finally realized I got to go to the hospital. And so I crawl to my truck, open the door. It's 3:00 in the morning now. And as soon as I like open the door handle, my ear like exploded. And that's the only way it felt like. It just went poof. Well, when it did, I looked down. And there's a critter that exploded out of my ear. And it fell on my arm. And and the next day when I'm telling this story at the golf course, because I was in a golf tournament, I described what happened because I had never seen this critter. And I thought, what is this thing? You know, of course, I killed it. It was not a wasp. So this is the critter that was in my ear. You see that? The top picture.
And I guess we'll show a picture of this to our audience.
No, it wasn't a scorpion. It looked like a scorpion. That's called an earwig.
A what?
Earwig.
Earwig.
Yeah. Look.
So I learned to love the evil-looking earwig.
Yeah, that.
Jace, it's at this point, I know you're my second son. And you're not given to tangents or our untrue statement.
Oh,
but is this a true story?
Yes. Look. So, look, I'm at the golf course, and I'm telling this story. Doc, because it was a traumatic experience. My ear was so sore. And I was like, I had a bug in my ear. Well, the guy, the greenskeeper or whatever at the golf course, he's majors at, what's the word for whatever the horticulture or whatever. Oh, he knows every bug, He said, that was an earwig. And I said, an earwig? Because I said, I don't know what this thing was.
Do they live in ears?
Look. So he Googled it. And when he pulled up this picture, I said, that was it. And he said, yeah, they it's an earwig. Well, I started doing research on it. They call them earwigs because of folklore. They say that these things used to get in human ears and would try to lay eggs and eat your brains out. But they said it's all you if you Google this, which I'm sure everybody listening to this, they'll Google it. And they're like, it's all folklore. And I'm like, no, they will get in your ear because one got in my ear. And those pinchers there, when I said it was a pain, that was going into my eardrum. That's what, look, blood, he broke the skin that I was bleeding out the ear because he was poking me. So I'm like, are you kidding me? Now, I don't think he was, they say, you know, they can't get inside your head and eat your brains out. But what I'm saying is he was looking for a home. That's why I felt the pressure and all that. So I'm like, what are the odds that an earwig got in my ear.
On top of a guinea wasp on your chest.
In the same night.
Previously.
In the same night, I had a I went to ULM. I came home. There was a wasp in my chest and an earwig in my ear.
The same night.
And they call it earwig because they say they wiggle in your ear. That's what they're called. But they're harmless. But let me tell you.
Your brother, Al, is just a bugged out dude. I mean, I don't know. I never heard a story like this.
I don't know if you're like a magnet. I'm not sure. I'm grappling with the moral of the story.
Well, you remember the story when Willie had the
water bug.
I remember.
He had a water bug get in his ear. And you remember he was like, there was pain because he was fluttering his wing. We took him to the ER.
I actually stood over him and said, hey, quit hollering. I didn't realize there was a bug in his ear until they took him to the doctor and got it out.
But they did the same thing. They flushed it. He was 15. They flushed his ear with stuff just like you were.
The flushing was a good move.
But look, it never occurred to me there was a bug in my ear. You know what I mean? Because I stuck my finger in my ear. I didn't feel the bug. I mean, this thing was big. It was about that long.
Oh my gosh.
And it just coiled up in there and was just them. He just hit me with it.
Jace, that is one of the wildest stories I have ever heard come from a human being.
If you ever wanted to torture a human, you put an earwig in their ear.
This happened on Wrath of Khan on Star Trek. They put the thing in the guy's ear. You know that goes in there. It wraps itself around the. Somebody was trying to mind control you. Evil, you know, person.
So I wake up the next morning, you know, because I only got 3 hours sleep. I tell Missy, I'm like, you're not going to believe what happened to me. I tell her the story. And of course, she said what you did. She's like, why didn't you wake me up?
That was my first thought.
Well, I didn't know there was a bug in my ear. I thought I was dying.
Well, when you're dying, your wife might could help you out. She might could.
That's what she said.
So what's the word?
You talk about lone wolf.
Are there a lot of the earwigs running around?
Well, that's what I'm wondering. You wouldn't believe it. I want to sleep with earplugs now. You've like totally frightened me.
They said they hang out like around houses because they're nocturnal. They only come out at night, but they look for like little holes and crevices and. They're like highly, they have a lot of bacteria because they, you know, and so I'm like, well, I'll know and, you know, I'm giving
Jace,
it a week.
Jace, after this has happened, you're telling the story, but right now, at least, Al, he sounds perfectly normal.
He seems to be, but is he controlled by another entity? Now, like, I'm fearful of the whole setting here.
I'm reminiscent of the plague of locusts. And
well, that's what I thought.
Or is there a biblical connotation to what you
know
are?
What I thought? I thought we're talking about Moses. I know what happened during Moses' time. You had the 10 plagues. And I've always just been fascinated, especially in Louisiana, on how many bugs you know, that we have. And that what is the thing that ever, what is it, 18 years, you have the, what are they called? The locusts. They're not called locusts.
And then the killer pillars come through every.
Killer pillars come through.
The black ones that'll sting the crap.
I've seen them by the millions.
They walk on you. They make tracks.
Oh, just a track.
It's like a railroad track of
like
lesions.
Acid.
He's everywhere he walks, for some reason, it's like a. Tissue is leaving there.
Right.
And it's just like a railroad track until you catch them, and they hurt.
Look, I know the fear you're talking about because, you know, it's almost teal season. You remember, Dad, when I was a teenager, me and Greg went over to the pothole, which is now our property. It wasn't back then. And, you know, teal season, it's warm, so we just waded out in our blue jeans and tennis shoes. We're teal hunting.
Yeah.
And I don't know, about an hour into it, I feel something I think is biting me inside my pants leg, right below my kneecap. I'm just feeling this, and I'm thinking it's a snake because, you know, I've been looking for snakes the whole time anyway. And I'm just like, something's up. And so Greg's standing there next to me. So I start peeling up my pants leg, just like you described with the wasp. And then when I get to the, like, just at the base, I see something, you know, that looks snakeish, you know, and it's big. I can tell whatever it is. I keep coming. It's a catfish. It's a little fiddler cat about this big.
With sharp, and he's sharp fins.
He's turned around, and his fin is sticking into my shin. Right. And that was the pain. I was like, so
I would have thought cottonmouth.
As soon as I peeled up that bottom, Greg pointed his shotgun at my lats. Whoa. I was like, let's don't do anything rash here. Let's at least get it up. So that fear... that right at that moment when you're not sure what it is.
I mean, I'm usually not, you know, when I go, every time I go frog hunting, first thing you do is take a shower when you get home, because you have critter. There's so many bugs.
Yeah.
I mean, the other night, there's, I looked down and there's like,
they were crawling on me this morning. I wasn't going to bring it up till I heard your story, but in my case, this morning, when I got through brushing a duck blind, crawling around in it, I put a door on it in the back, you know, a lot of weeds, stuff. Mm. We killed two or three cottonmouths 3 weeks ago when we worked on it. They were under some boards that had come off the blind. But in my case, fire ants, they bit me, and there'll be a little zit where they bit me. But it's almost a daily occurrence to the point to where you get used to getting stung by fire ants around here.
You remember that morning when we were duck hunting? Because when you go in the blind, you don't have if you don't have a light, you're crawling around in a duck blind in the woods, and ain't no telling what's there.
That is correct.
I remember that morning you crawled in there and you didn't realize all those ants were, you know, you
by the millions.
Yeah, and you were like one big zit.
Well, we had to duck hunt because we're duck hunting. We're not going to let ants run us off. But when I looked down, I had stirred them up when I got in the blind and the dog was there. So it was Blue, my dog, and me. We were where the ants were. Listen, we sat there. I tried to rake them off out in the water, but it just stirred them up more. And I said, well, we just going to have to suck it up and live with it. Well, they were just coming up my hip boots and getting to my body, and I constantly was just squashing them on my stomach, my sides of my body, on my rib cage, on my back. I just lean up against a post. And my dog, Blue, was in misery. He was shaking and trying to get them off of it, and, you know, like they do their teeth.
Yeah.
And we're both fighting fire ants.
Think about it.
Here come some ducks. So we'd forget the fire ant. Boom, 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 boom.
And
boom.
Then you're back to...
The dog was happy to jump in the water. And he was jumping in the water, but the fire ants, by the way, I had like, it was over 100 stings.
Yeah.
And it did not make me feel chirpy. I didn't feel chirpy.
Well, there's a lot of poison.
I didn't feel good.
Yeah, well, that many. The problem is when we're duck hunting, every pest in the swamp where we live, 9 months out of the year, our duck blinds are their house.
That is correct.
So we roll in thinking this is our house. We built this, but they don't know any different. The ants, the wasps, the snakes.
Nothing really gets our attention in this neck of the woods, ladies and gentlemen. You're hearing a story, true story, of what can happen if you live in Louisiana. Here, we're more concerned with copperheads, cottonmouths, rattlesnakes, and coral snakes. We have all four. We watch them very carefully. Our dogs have been bitten through the years, every year. Our dogs are bitten and all that. So far, no one has been, at least where it came through our boot or something, we haven't been bitten where we have to go to the doctor about it. But we have black widow spiders, and they're very poisonous. Brown recluse, of course. A lot of wasp. Bumblebees,
and now
earwigs.
Now we add earwig.
You can add it.
Now we have earwigs, which is a new one for me.
Let me just tell you, this shows you that you should not believe everything you read on the internet, because everything I read said it was folklore.
So our good friends at TacPac have sent us some more of their tactical gear.
Yep.
Every month, for $49.95 a month, they ship you at least $100 worth of gear. Man, we got all kind of cool stuff in here. We got stuff that's going to help us if, you know, this thing ever goes to crap, which is always possible.
Yep.
They ship out AR-15 parts, EDC tools, knives, cleaning kits, anything tactical that might help you if you get into some kind of emergency. So we want you to sign up. You get an October TAC pack. You got to do that before they run out, because it's coming up very quickly. You go to TACPAC.com when you use the promo code PHIL. So it's TACPAC.com use the code PHIL. You're going to get a folding knife free with this first one, which is always good. I don't know about you guys, but I can't have enough pocket knives.
Well, when somebody says, what do you have all this stuff for? You can say, I'm just trying to survive.
That plus there's a difference between being paranoid and just simply being prepared.
That's right.
Just be prepared.
That's exactly right. So you get a lot of really good gear. It's a good deal. tacpack.com, get the October pack, use the offer code Phil. So you're going to save some money. You're going to get some cool stuff. We love waiting. Our show's up every month. We dive into it. We split it up among ourselves. I mean, I'm getting prepared every month. What about you, Joe?
Hey, I stay ready.
There you go.
You and me both.
TacPack.com, offer code Phil. Do it today.
I mean, they're like, well, I'm supposing they could, but they don't. But
year
I'm
before
like,
last,
oh, but they do.
Year before last, we were eating up. About time to get it on our Bible study here, but the bottom line is, year before last, I looked them up in the dictionary, and they're in there, and the varmint, that the bug, he was like a gnat, but we couldn't tell where they were coming from, but they literally were sucking the blood out of us. We came up with a.
But my point,
the
Phil,
perfume,
is,
what's it called?
Yeah, the women's
Victoria's
perfume.
Secret. We talked about that.
We talked about that. But the bottom line is, they were called no-see-ums, which I'd never heard of.
Because you can't
I'm
see them.
What I'm saying is, if you read something that happened, when was Exodus written? What are they saying?
3,500 years ago.
Oh, I thought it was more than that. 3,500 years, and you hear this story. I mean, here's Moses, you know, leading the captives, you know, out of Egypt. They're going to the promised land, and all of a sudden you have this episode where you have 10 plagues, and it's these critters. But when you look at life today, you see signs of what happens when these critters get out of hand. Even what I'm saying is, I'm laying on my couch, and here a critter says, yeah, let me try that ear hole for a home. I mean, I can't imagine if it was a plague. I mean...
For you, it was.
Well, yeah, but I'm saying when you read that story, what chapter is that story in?
It's Exodus 10.
Yeah, I mean, here's...
Well, living in Louisiana, ladies and gentlemen, can be a deal. What's our topic today? Jay said it was a pretty good story.
Exodus starts in 7.
But what I'm saying is
true story.
I think it was... I didn't take it as coincidence that we're talking... Yeah, Exodus 10. That we're fixed to talk about Exodus. This is a famous story. I just feel like you see that evidence in all these critters. I mean, what they say, 90% of the insects in the world hasn't even been discovered when you factor in all land and sea. I mean, where this came from? Seaweed? What I'm saying is all the details in all these little bitty critters, because they said there was like, you know, 120 different strands of the earwig. You know, all these little...
Strains.
Yeah. Strands.
It's a redneck deal, but no problem.
Yeah. Well, I just
it's
mean,
in the neighborhood. Did you see in Vegas like a month ago when the grasshoppers moved in on Vegas? This is about a month or 6 weeks ago. I mean, they were piled up on the side of those big high-rise...
And that hit Sin City?
Hit Sin City.
Well, remember the year of the crickets?
Huh.
Remember
yeah.
the...
Oh, yeah.
Tens of thousands of crickets dead.
So a plague of locusts has struck the Sin City recently.
Yeah, and they were talking about it because it was like, why did this happen?
We're living in strange times.
Maybe it was all the bright lights.
Do you think, based on what you read here, that still kind of happens in some degree?
Makes one wonder.
What is the deal with all these epidemic of insect, or even, you know, like you remember the year the raccoons took over? You looked up and there were raccoons everywhere. And then they basically died out because of disease, but they were literally just falling out of
the trees.
You know,
Jace, you brought up an interesting point. Ladies and gentlemen, it is worth noting that the rats that have infested the homeless community in L.A. and San Francisco and everything, there's so much of human feces and unused needles, and they claim they're worried about things like typhus. They've had cases of it, and the plagues that have hit human beings through the years, all the way back to biblical times. Al, you know, you think about it right now on the streets in these major cities in the United States of America, plagues are there waiting through these rats and all this. So you get to thinking about it. Maybe we are not too far off from the biblical stories. I tell you one thing. It agrees with the biblical stories.
Well, and interestingly enough,
plagues of locusts.
Where we are in our text, this is the first evidence we see where God uses pestilence
yep.
to impact world events.
Now we're going to and our weather. He's used both
and weather, so he's going to do it a lot as we go forward. But this is the first time we ever see it was in this context.
It's at least worthy of note.
It's worthy of note. And what's interesting is, and we sort of started out with the plagues, but to connect the dots into where we're going.
Hi, it's Jason Whitlock. Have you secured your spot for Roll Call 2.0, my annual men's summit in Nashville, Tennessee? Are you looking for an opportunity to fellowship with other believers, to come together across the identity lines the left have drawn to divide us? Join me, country music star John Rich, and Blaze founder Glenn Beck in Nashville on Saturday, June 1st for Roll Call 2.0. We're going to listen to great music, eat fantastic barbecue, and hear inspiring speeches from myself, Glenn Beck, North Carolina Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson, Pastor E.W. Jackson, and many more. Let's quit letting the satanic left sift us like wheat. Let's come together as men and talk about the sacrifices we must make to restore the unity and shared values that made our country the envy of the world. Visit fearlessarmyrollcall.com to secure your spot.
The last time we talked about Joseph basically settling in Egypt, remember there were only 70 people to begin with. It was Jacob and his sons, 70 people. And so what's happened is we fast forward now when you get to Exodus 1. And so that 70 has turned into over 2 million people. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, somebody says, well, you know, I don't know how many years did it take. They're there a long time. Generations have gone by. Leadership has changed. Some invaders have come in from the south. Egypt has been toppled. Now there's a new pharaoh. So Joseph, remember, had favor. All that's gone. So what's happened is, in Exodus 1, Exodus 2, is these God's people, the seedlings, remember, because we talked about the promises that Abraham's looking forward,
yep,
they have grown into this huge number of people. Mm-hmm. Well, the new leadership comes into Egypt, and they look at this as a threat, which I find interesting talking about geopolitics like we do now. What if you had a group of, you know, back then 2.5 million people was a lot bigger. That would probably be 25 million people in the,
that's right,
like in America.
That's right.
And they had their own belief system and they were there, but you wonder, are they a menace or are they with us? So that's what happens with the Egyptian control. And so they take them to be a menace. They say, well, you know, somebody comes in and attacks us, they join them, we're done. So they started treating them cruelly and they basically turned them into slave labor. They believe in God because they're still following the traditions of Jacob and Abraham. Mm-hmm. Egypt has their own system. You know, they got Ra, the sun god. They got all these gods. So that's the sort of recipe, the petri dish for which now comes out, you know, this idea.
Well, you have this strange occurrence where God appears to Moses in the burning bush. I mean, what's your take on that? I mean, you see a bush start burning. It won't burn up. Because, you know, I'm an outdoors person. If I saw a bush burning, I waited. It's not burning up. You go over there, then it starts talking.
It would tend to get your attention.
It would have my undivided attention.
I'm just saying, if somebody was going to make all this stuff up, that right, is pretty out there.
Right.
You know, By the way, Al, could you make a sound argument that the human race, we're in Exodus of the Bible. We've already looked at Genesis, where at one point their every thought, the entire human race, their every thought was evil. And we look at how humans interact with one another and what keeps coming up. And we're like, well, that's just Old Testament stories. What keeps coming up? Human beings, especially in this case, at war with each other.
Yeah.
We don't want this bunch of coming over here, right, this, that, yeah, yeah, which is what's,
well,
Exodus. Just because we're different.
Could you make an argument that the human beings have been at war with each other ever since they've been human beings on the earth?
Over political power. And what's interesting is that it's a great point.
And that they're just different.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So where are you from? And you tell them, they're like, I don't like you.
Or I believe something different than you do. So
all look, this division, you say, boy, this is a new thing. But Al, this is not a new thing.
And look how they were going to try to control the situation. One, they had them under the boot on the throat of these people. But guess how they tried to control their population? abortion, infanticide. Yep. Yep. They went to these midwives, Egyptian midwives, and they said, look, when a baby boy is born, you make sure it doesn't make it. Yep. But these midwives, there were these Hebrew people, and I thought, these are good people. They just couldn't carry it out. It reminds me of this Planned Parenthood woman that changed. She was like, I can't do that. So they called him in. They were like, I thought you were supposed to be killing all these baby boys. And they said, well, these Hebrew women are strong. We show up to help deliver the baby. The baby's already there. So basically they lied.
So even abortion out, it's not a new thing.
It's not a new thing. And again, it was used in the idea, just like, by the way, when Planned Parenthood started, this Sanger and all these people, it was about controlling population.
Sure.
They were like, kill off races of people. It's awful. It's evil. And so we saw it, the seedlings.
The hatred
of
your fellow man manifests itself in a lot of cruel ways.
Absolutely awful. So here's what the new Pharaoh says. Okay, we're going to take it one step further. Forget the midwives. He orders.
So where are you in the Bible when you're talking about this, Al?
Exodus 2.
Exodus 2 and 3. Burning bush happened at 3.
It's right there for your learning, ladies and gentlemen.
So then he says, throw them all in the river. Every baby boy born, throw them in the
river. Just drown them.
Just drown them. So now we're just into just killing every
And you
male.
Say, well, I can't believe how cruel that was. Really? I mean, look at modern day America.
It's
and
terrible.
You're like, yeah, or China. I mean, you know, they're passing these
Same
rules
mindset.
On you, the human, especially if they're males. You see what I'm saying?
So here's what happened to Moses. His mom, she followed the new order. She threw him in the river, but she put him in a basket that she had fixed up that wouldn't sink. And she had his sister take him down, and Pharaoh's daughter, she knew where she came down and bathed every day. So she took that baby and she pushed him along the reed. And this is Moses, who would later have the burning bush and be the leader.
He's barely here.
He's in the river as directed, but he floats up there. She sees him, Pharaoh's daughter, and says, look at that. It's one of those Hebrew babies. Because, see, everybody knew what was going on. But this one, instead of just being thrown in the river, was floating along. She takes him out of compassion. And then the sister comes in there and says, hey, I got a nursemaid that could help you out. So it's, oh, yeah. So,
why does that make me mad?
It's
terrible.
But by her taking him out, that just shows you sometimes the human race hangs by a thread.
That's right.
Just events just happen to take place. One little baby floating along in a reed, and some woman who her culture said, kill them. Throw them in the river. And here's one that floats by, and she says, you know.
So Moses spends the first 40 years of his life being raised in Pharaoh's house, which, of course, he learned a lot of good leadership there. But he wasn't
found
quite ready.
Found
the reeds. He winds up getting expelled from the country. Another 40 years goes by. And then we come to where Jace's scene is. He's 80 years old, and he has a speech impediment. He cannot speak clearly. I don't know if that happened during the 40. I don't know how it happened to it, but he's called to this burning bush. He's out there tending sheep. He's looking around. I mean, he doesn't see himself as a leader. His days are gone. He's 80 years old.
Well, I think I've always wanted somebody to write a song about this. I told my son, I was like, you need to write a song that says this conversation. In Exodus 3, you know, he has the burning bush. It starts talking. He says, so now I'm sending you to Pharaoh to bring my – it's God talking in verse 10. To my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. But Moses said to God, who am I? And those three words stuck out to me. What I said, somebody should write a song, maybe somebody listening will. Because later on, God tells him in verse 14, when he gets to his response, God said to Moses, and he took – Moses' three words, who am I? And he turned around and said, I am who I am. Because Moses was like, I'm not adequate. I mean, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh? You know, that's what he said.
Moses said, what is his name? Then what shall I tell him? He said, I am who I am. That's what you say to him.
Yeah, he said, this is what you ought to say to the Israelites. I am has sent.
By the way, just a little caveat here, but I think it's worth mentioning. It just occurred to me. Before I was converted, I was leasing a beer joint, ladies and gentlemen. A beer joint. You're like, where they're
That's
fighting
a bar,
and
by
drunkenness.
The way, in the modern
vernacular. Redneck bar.
And at my conversion, the reason I was converted is my younger sister, Janice Ellen, told a preacher, a proclaimer, and a good one. She told him, if you convert my brother, he'll convert thousands. And the preacher said, say what? She said, if you convert him, let's go up there to the beer joint. You convert him, thousands will be converted. My little sister is telling the preacher that. That's what happened.
Yeah.
I was converted. I'm sitting up there keeping the peace in a
with two pistols.
Segregated beer joint, blacks in the back, whites in the front. You had the hip hop going in one direction and then country and western, you know, Loretta Lynn in the other. I have a pistol and I'm trying to keep the peace, not knowing that I'm fixed to be converted. And by me being converted, would in fact, as my sister had predicted, reach thousands. So if you look at it, Al,
yeah,
like I say, the little strands.
That's right.
On the way God works out things is beyond your. I would have never, if someone had come to the beer joint and said, hey, by the way, dude, before this is all over, you'll be carrying your Bible and preaching the gospel to people all over the world.
But God always uses people that you just don't think he would use to really transform the world.
The reason I brought it up is because because I would have said, who am I?
Right. That's what everybody says. Yeah. You know,
you did in a sense when Smith sat down and shared the good news with you.
Yeah,
which was just the fast forward of this story and a lot
That's
of others.
Correct.
He basically explained to you that Jesus came to this earth. Guess what Jesus said when the Jews said, "Who are you? To what authority do you have?" And he said, "I am."
That's right.
Oh, that I am.
It's the greatest
it's
line
the same
in the history of humanity. The greatest line is when they said, where's that in John?
Yeah, John 8.
He says, who are you? And he's like, I am.
That's right.
From beer joint to right. sharing the good news. I look back at it now, I'm thinking, yeah. A lot of times I ask myself, why me? You know, because right. I'm still
who
saying. You know, how in the world would you have considered me?
It's a great point. And every one of us can ask that question, you know.
Oh, that's right.
But it's because of the
We all ask that at some point. You're like, well, who am I to do that? I mean, sometimes you know the good to do or, you know. The first time I was ever asked to speak, you know, publicly, I said three words. Well, who am I? I mean, you don't want me.
That's right.
But in the back of your mind, based on what we understand in Jesus and being sons of God, you realize that I am
when the congregation asked me to become one of the overseers, Al.
Yeah.
And the current overseers came to me and said, the congregation wants you to oversee them, look after them, raise them up in the faith. And I'm like, are you serious?
Right.
And they said they want you to do that. Right. And I'm like, I don't know about that. So I backed off of it. I was just like Moses. Yeah. I ran. I said, right. No, I don't know about it. I don't want that title, overseer, right. which is a bishop or an elder, ladies and gentlemen. But I ran from it at first. But then somebody finally said, what if it's God's will that you do this right. for his people? I thought, well, then I started feeling a little bit guilty on why I just didn't step up.
Right.
So I begrudgingly, after about 4 months of praying about it and thinking about it, I said, I'll tell you what, all right, I'll give her a go. So,
well, you know, it's interesting.
I'm still there.
We didn't tell the story in Exodus 2, but when Moses was 40 and he had been raised in the house of Pharaoh, but remember he had a Hebrew heart because his mom had raised him and he had been around. He knew he was a Hebrew in his heart, but nobody else knew. And so they thought he was an Egyptian. He killed an Egyptian guard that was mistreating a Hebrew.
Yep.
And I believe, and the Bible doesn't say this, but it seems like he was thinking, okay, I'm going to rise up and get these people out of this situation. I mean, that's a pretty bold move to kill a guy.
Very bold.
And so the next day he comes up on two Hebrews. They're fighting each other. He said, why are you fighting? And one of them says, what are you going to do? Kill us like you did the Egyptians? And immediately the Bible says he was afraid because then he knew the word was out. Well, then Pharaoh got after him. That's what sent him down to the Midian desert for 40
yeah.
years. So what I'm
yeah.
saying is the point is, he thought it was his moment to lead, but he still had 40 years of humility training before God was ready to use it.
Something so pertinent to modern day, these biblical stories out of the Old Testament. I will just ask the audience to think about these things and say, how in the world could a 40 people for a 5,000-year period from creation to Jesus.
Right.
How in the world could you have dreamed these things up, Al? And they're so pertinent today. How
well,
could
that's
you have
why
done?
I thought. That's why I brought up the earwig and the plagues. You know, because look, when I was a teenager, one of the most motivational sermons I ever heard, and I believe it was Jeff Walling did a what do they call those things?
Like a seminar,
thing. It was for young people.
Yeah.
But the title of it was "One More Night with the Frogs." Well, that got my attention. I was like, I'm going to hear that because I'm the number one thing I like to do
big
outside
frog
of Jesus. Yeah, is catch frogs. I mean, I'm like, one more night with the frogs. What is this about? I didn't even realize he was going to talk about what
one
happened.
Of the plagues.
You know, in Exodus 8. His point was when I read it, you know, I mean, you can imagine, you know, God Almighty unleashing any group of insects or frogs.
Amphibians,
or, yeah,
reptiles. Whatever
happens, you know it had to be miserable. And so he was miserable. Pharaoh was. So he's like, please stop this. You know, this is... And so Aaron, I believe, said, well, we'll stop. God said he'll stop, but you determine the time. You know, and I'm not sure why they even had that conversation. But what was shocking and what was the point of the sermon, what motivated me, is that he said tomorrow. He said, "You whenever you want this to stop, you can make it stop." And he's like, tomorrow. And so I looked at it. It's like Exodus 8:10, which his whole point is, here you are miserable. You're not doing what God wants you to do. And then God comes to you via us and says, we will give you relief. When do you want that relief? And he's like,
tomorrow?
You want another night of
another
this?
Night with
I mean, and then I thought about, that's first thing I thought about when I had that earwig in my ear. I was thinking, if somebody would have come down, you know, before that exploded out of my ear, after I built the earwax bomb, and somebody said, look, I'll give you relief. I just wouldn't have said tomorrow. You know what I mean? I was like, get that out of my ear now. But when you don't believe, when you don't want to surrender, when you don't want to submit, when you don't want to believe, you know, and you think you can do it on your own without God, which was his
maybe
point.
Tomorrow.
Yeah. Let me see if I can take this. You know, it's just sin, living in sin, right. It's just not rational.
Yeah, you know why would you want to stay in it?
Yeah.
It's interesting you brought up Walling. I can't believe it because Walling was part of my humility training. I mean, Jeff, we love Jeff, right?
Yeah.
His preaching.
Well, I've got to know him recently because my son is going to Pepperdine, and Walling is the, what is he, the Pepperdine?
He's like something over the students. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. So I see him from time to
look,
time.
So Jason and I and Willie grow up just, you know, I mean, he was just such a great speaker, just like that, coming up with ideas, which is an awesome sermon. So I'm a young preacher. I get invited to speak at a big workshop in Tulsa that we go to. So I'm like, man, this is the moment, you know? I mean, thousands of people, you know, are going to be at this event. So I'm nervous, but I'm excited at the same time. And so I come in and there's three speakers in a row. And so obviously whoever was the middle speaker was a big name that dropped out because that's where they stuck me. Nobody knew who I was, right? So I'm smart enough because I've been to these things.
This
enough.
Is your who am I moment.
Exactly. So Walling is before me and Don McLaughlin is after me. I knew those guys. They're awesome. And I was like, ooh, that more pressure, right? So I made the mistake of going to hear Walling speak. That was a bad call. I should have just hung out in the group. You know, they have green rooms back there. Hung out somewhere and then come in. So I go in there. Walling is just killing it, you know. And there's like 2,500 people in this big place. And I'm sitting out there and I'm, you know, running through my notes in my mind and listening to him. Oh, man, this guy's so good. So then Gary Myers, our old pal who's gone to be with the Lord, he gets up after Walling finished. He said, you know, Jeff's going to be at our booth signing books. I mean, just totally destroyed any hope I had of keeping in this people. So, look, 2,500 people, 200 people stay for me. So we just cut the audience from 2,500 to 200 in a place that holds 5,000.
Yeah.
And most of them.
So you had trouble drawing a crowd.
So I walk up there. So this is the reason I bring it up. So this is humility for Al. So I get up there, and you got to have an opening line, which, you know, so my opening line was, there hadn't been an exodus like that since Moses left Egypt, which was a hilarious line. Yeah. 200 people laughed, and then I went into my little script, and then they all came back for the next guy. So it was a lesson for me to learn that, you know, you may think you're a big deal, but you may not be a big deal at all.
I think was the whole point of this story. I mean,
exactly.
You know what I thought? Because one of the most awesome passages in the New Testament is at the Transfiguration. You have Jesus, Moses, and Elijah. Now, what's weird about that is Elijah, he just didn't die. He just got caught up in. Well, then Moses, there's this huge argument in other passages. I know, I think Jude says something about there was an argument from the evil one over where Moses' body.
Over the body of Moses.
Yeah, over the body of Moses, where it was buried. So there's like some unknown, you know, occurrences.
Well, look, in Deuteronomy, it says, here's what the verse says. In Deuteronomy, I can't remember, 4 maybe, says God buried Moses.
Yeah, which I've read that before. What a statement. Like, who's going to bury you?
God's doing the funeral. Yeah,
God buried that guy. Let me tell you, if God's burying you, you did something awesome. He used you in mighty ways.
Yeah.
But what I was saying is when
fast forward thousands of years and they show up talking to Jesus on a mountaintop.
Well, yeah. Here you are in the Transfiguration and Peter, you know, like an idiot, is like, he don't even know what to say. He's like, should we build some shelters for you? I think it's Matthew 17. But don't you know that Moses probably looked back at that who am I moment, and now he's up here. You're like, Star Trek is real now. You just got beamed from somewhere, and you're having a conversation with a guy who left in a spiritual chariot and God himself in Jesus, and you're having a conversation?
Woo!
Boy, you've come a long way, buddy.
I guarantee you.
From saying, who am I? And that's why I love that statement that Jesus made. And I've said it before when people have made fun of me, especially in my younger years, for following Jesus. I've used that I am statement. I'm like, I'm following the I am. And they're like, do what?
Yeah.
I said, no, he just is.
Which means there's no past, present, or future. He's outside. He's bigger than time, which was Jesus' point.
You know, I went through a stage in my life where, you know, first I was persecuted. Like, you know, if you live a Christian life in high school, you're going to be persecuted. It's not easy.
At any time, Jason.
But after a while, I realized, what do these people have? Nothing.
Yeah.
So when I started getting bold about Jesus, that's one of the lines I would use. And I was like, look, I'm indestructible because he's indestructible. I'm the most dangerous person you'll ever be around. But look, especially in sports, you know, because I love to trash talk. You know what I mean? I'm like, what are you going to do to me? I'm indestructible, man. They're looking at me
you
like,
you can't guard me.
Yeah. That's what I would use it as motivation because I thought, well, I talked to Tebow about that one time. He's like, hey, I did the same thing. Because you feel like I'm going to heaven. I'm going to live forever. I have purpose in life. I have meaning. I have forgiveness. Now we're going to get out here.
Guaranteed immortality.
We're going to play this silly game of football. Well, let me tell you something. I'm going to get some confidence on who I am and where I'm headed, you know, and I'm going to use that to try to intimidate you, and we might just bring you to Jesus.
There you go. It works out. It's Deuteronomy 34, by the way, if you're taking notes, when God buries Moses, you can check that out. So great discussion. We just kind of barely started the conversation about Moses because obviously, I mean, outside of Abraham and Jesus, I mean, he's one of the, and Elijah, one of the central figures of the
Bible. And I had to tell y'all my story. And look, I felt like y'all gave me zero compassion for that.
Well, I was really not prepared for the earwig story.
I was not either. It was quite the story.
That was a doozy, no doubt
about
it. For the record, that happened, and you don't want it to happen to you.
And for the record, it prompted 2 Star Trek references on the podcast, the first ever, I might mention. So we'll see you guys next time on Unashamed Podcast, and we'll flesh out a little more Moses.
Rock on.
So we're so glad you guys were with us today. You can subscribe on iTunes or Spotify or YouTube or Facebook, and be sure and rate us on iTunes so that other people can know about the podcast.